Ready?
Our evening began in Peter Seychelles' comfortable study in his New York townhouse.
No sleep till
Brooklyn! Yeah! Brooklyn, Bronx, Queens, it's that end. From the Battery to the top of Manhattan.
Yo, rope!
Hello there, everybody. My name is Jim Shear, and welcome to another episode of the Brouhaha. On today's episode, we are going to flip the script a bit. Instead of me asking someone questions, someone will ask me questions. And that someone is Labor 1969. And if you go on to the Beastie Boys message boards, you know that this man is legend. Some call him Jason. He will be on in just a little bit. And Mikadin, some of you may know him from the message boards. He will play a game of 20 questions, and he will try to win a Beastie Boys diorama. And before we do all of that, we are fresh off the Top Chef Just Desserts episode featuring the King Ad Rock. And when I saw the little teaser at the beginning of the season, hell yeah, I was excited. And I was waiting weeks and weeks and weeks for it to come. And then finally yesterday it aired. And I must say, I was very happy with the episode. My only complaint is that the poor chefs, instead of making pastries or cupcakes or icing, they had to make savory desserts, which involved vegetables and potatoes and gravy. I know it doesn't make much sense. Especially, you know, considering that Ad Rock loves chocolate fondue. Mentioned in the brand new album, Hot Sauce Committee Part 2. Other than that, though, thoroughly enjoyed the episode. If you guys have not seen it yet, I'm sure you can watch it on demand. I'm sure there'll be clips on the internet soon. And I'm sure there'll be reruns, because Bravo likes to have those marathons where they just show the episodes over and over and over again. I was glad to see that some of the chefs were big Beastie Boys fans. The one lady with the cast, she even had Ad Rock sign her cast. She said that her and Ad Rock were getting married. Maybe she doesn't know that he already is married. And then I'm so glad that the chef who won was the chef who made two important Beastie Boys connections. And I'll explain right now. The quick fire challenge in the episode called for the pastry chefs to make desserts out of root vegetables. I know. I thought it was odd too. And then after the quickfire challenge, the one chef said, "Yo, Ad Rock's here. Whoa, we're kicking a root down." And I'm like, "Yes, that's a perfect connection there. We're going to kick it root down with the root vegetables." And then I don't know if I'm explaining this correctly, but each chef had to pick an ingredient, and then their competitors picked an ingredient for them, hence sabotaging them. And this chef had to cook a dessert which involved potatoes and gravy, and then you know that he made the beautiful connection.
Shit, if this is going to be that kind of party, I'm going to stick my dick in the mashed potatoes.
What else did I want to say about the show? The stock music, a little cheesy, but you could tell that the stock music, they were also paying, you know, tribute to the Beastie Boys. And then I like that when they showed the sabotage ingredients, they showed the corresponding Beastie Boys lyric. And you guys need to do yourself a favor. You need to watch this episode of Top Chef. And Ad Rock, you know, he's a television personality. I thought he carried himself well. Critiqued the food nicely. And it made me think that this, I believe, is the first Beastie Boys sighting on national TV since Hot Sauce Committee Part 2 has been released. I might be wrong, but when the album first came out, I know that MCA and Ad Rock were doing, or no, Ad Rock and Mike D were doing a lot of radio. They did no TV, and I think this is the first time we've seen a Beastie Boy on TV since they've released Hot Sauce Committee Part 2, and it was 1 hour of good television. There you go. When we come back, Laver 1969, he will be here, and we will just chew the fat Beastie Boy style.
Hey, kids, gather around for Biz's Beat of the Day.
Okay.
Let's all do it together with Biz.
Hey, kids, this is Biz's Beat of the Day. Okay, here's Biz's Beat of the Day. Yum, 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 yum. Now practice that at home. And I'll see you later. Happy Halloween. Bye-bye.
The Brew Ha Ha.
We have returned to the Brew Ha Ha. And as promised, Beastie Boys fan legend, Laver, 1969. And right now we are going to do the podcast equivalent of two old guys sitting in the backyard on a porch swing, drinking some Bartles and James, and talking about the Beastie Boys. Ain't that right, Laver?
That is correct. That is correct. And I would like to turn the tables a little bit here and interview the interviewer, if I can. Talk about your Beastie experiences, your Beastie knowledge, your Beastie history, and your Beastie fandom.
Yeah, I mean, the one time you were on the Brouhaha, you brought up this idea, and I said, I love it. I always talk about the Beastie Boys. Sometimes I annoy people by talking too much about the Beastie Boys, so this is perfect. I hope I don't annoy you, though, by talking too much about the Beastie Boys.
Not at all. Not at all. Well, let's start in kind of reverse chronological order with the most recent Beastie experience or Beastie-related experience that you had. I saw that Team VH1 played softball against Ad Rock's team, The Pressure. Tell me about that.
We played The Pressure. It happened last week. And Chili, and I'm sure you're familiar with, you met Chili, right, at the MoMA event?
Yes, I did.
He has the Pressure Network blog, and I think he does the videos. I know he doesn't shoot the videos. I found out that Jose actually shoots the videos. But I ran up past Chili at the MoMA event. He said, yeah, let's do it. Took me about a month and a half to email him. Took him about a week and a half to email me back. But we got the game going. And I was hoping that Ad Rock would show, because that was a big sell around VH1. You know,
right.
Come play softball against the Beastie Boy. We got there a half hour before the game started. Three guys from The Pressure were there. They were Chili, Say, and the King Ad Rock.
Very cool.
So he was punctual. Very. Not only did he show, but he was a half hour early.
So does VH1 have an official team, or was this put together for this particular game?
This was put together for this game. We played well. The score was 3-3 going into the eighth inning. And then
So what you're saying is that a team that's put together at the last minute with no practice can hang with a team that has been practicing for months.
Well, you have to keep in mind, though, that the Pressure play inter-squad games every week. And I believe they have like a roster of over 22. So I think it's actually tough for them to boil it down to one team.
Okay.
And the Pressure also play with a slew of ground rules that I was not aware of. And I can give you some of those ground rules right now.
Sure.
Two foul balls over the side fence. That is an automatic out. A home run over the home run fence. That's an automatic out. However, if you hit the scoreboard on a fly, or there's this little sliver in the fence, if you can hit the ball through the sliver, those are both automatic home runs. No strikeouts. And this one sort of surprised me. No tag-ups.
Okay. Wow.
Yeah.
You got to remember all that going into it.
So, and I actually brought a rule to them. I said, because I wanted the game to be close, I said, 6 runs per inning until the last inning, and that's unlimited. And that's a wiffle ball rule that we have played for many years in Pittsburgh, PA.
Okay.
So just a big shout out to Say Adams, who got the game-winning run, and then Neil Medlin, he put the game out of reach with a in-the-park home run.
Wow. So any notable plays by the King Ed Rock?
He had a lot of pop-ups. And the reason being... Okay. And I'm not saying that I'm better than him, because I actually didn't get a hit the whole game, because they play with this mush ball. And if you don't hit it in the sweet spot, it sort of pancakes and it goes nowhere. And I've had one other game in my life with a mush ball.
Do you have to play with a glove, or is it like a cabbage ball?
No, everyone has a glove, aluminum bats, and like I said, it's that squishy type of softball. And I've played with the mush ball once before in my life, and I've had I just can't beat it. It just pancakes in the air if you don't hit the sweet spot.
Mm-hmm.
But Ad Rock, I mean, he has a great form when he's in the batter's box, and he plays the field well.
Very good. Were there any after-game activities? Did you guys go out to the neighborhood bar and talk about the game?
There was. We did go to the neighborhood bar, but it was sort of small inside, so half of the pressure left and half of them stayed. And the fans listening to the brouhaha right now want to know if Ad Rock stayed. Ad Rock had to leave, and so did Say.
Gotcha.
But we got to talk to Nadia. Nadia we got to hang out with at the bar.
Okay. Will there be a rematch?
Chili said, and this is his words, that he would like to do this every year. So I'm hoping that next year, around this time, Team VH1 can get revenge against the pressure.
Very cool.
Oh, and then finally,
experience.
It was great. And then if I can add one more thing, Max Tannone, the dude has game.
Well, he was the MVP last year, I believe.
It was amazing. He hit two balls off of the fence, and if you think about it, I mean, you don't want to hit it that hard, because if it goes 3 feet higher, it's an automatic out. So he hit it just right where he would hit the middle of the fence where I couldn't catch it, and it wasn't an automatic out. And I should also point out one more ground rule. You are allowed to catch the ball off the fence for an automatic out, but it's very tough to catch the ball off a carom.
Playing the wall, you have to be off the wall. Which, by the way, I think is a baseball reference in a couple of lyrics, a couple of different songs that's in there. I think that's a baseball reference. Other people.
It's funny. It's funny that you say that, because a few weeks ago I was in Pittsburgh playing wiffle ball in my backyard, and we have this big brick wall, and Prof D was there, and I was actually playing in front of the wall, and I said, "Yo, Prof D, wait, how's the lyric go?"
I want you off the wall if you're playing the wall.
I want you off the wall if you're playing. And I'm like, oh, I'm like, maybe he thought of that lyric when he was playing like wiffle ball or softball or stickball or something.
Yeah, if you run too close to the wall, you'll miss it. You gotta play off the wall. I think it's a baseball reference. One of those questions I'll ask one day. Okay, next. Your last podcast was, and I know I'll get the name wrong, but the best TV performances live in America or something like that.
Yes.
In that, you offered a world exclusive of the To the Five Boroughs soundcheck.
Yeah.
What's the backstory there? Because that's, you know, I like that kind of geeky stuff where you hear them practicing and adjusting levels. How did you get your hands on that? Or if you had it for a long time and this was just the perfect time to put it out there?
I got it from a friend, and I don't want to reveal his name because I didn't actually get his blessing to air it. But
right.
Since I had it in my possession, I was going to damn well broadcast it to the world. But basically, there are a ton of people, both at VH1 and MTV, that love the Beastie Boys. So whenever they're on our premises and there are cameras and microphones running, they should just assume that they're being recorded.
Mm-hmm.
And also, for their $2 bill show that they did back in 2004, there's a whole sound check that was videotaped. And for years, I've been trying to get my hands on that, but I haven't been able to. Because the producer of the show, I asked the producer, I'm like, hey, give me the freaking videotape of the sound check. He's like, well, go to my assistant. I went to the assistant. The assistant's like, well, go to the producer. I said, I already went to the producer. Back and forth, I've been doing this for years, and I haven't been able to get my hands on that yet.
Okay. Yeah, there's probably a ton of in the VH1 MTV vaults of stuff. In that podcast, you went down your top 10, and I like your top 10. Two honorable mentions that I wanted to throw out to you, okay. See if you had any thoughts on them.
Sure.
If you remember, Chris Rock had a show.
Mm-hmm. Body moving.
Body moving on Chris Rock's show. Did that one come up for consideration?
Absolutely. Yeah.
I do body moving very often, you know, on TV shows.
That was in the running. But what I did was, and because I didn't like assemble, you know, like an elite cast to pick out the top 10, I was just going off of which ones that I would want to go back and see the most. And I remember I would watch that a few times, but I didn't watch it as much as the ones that finished in the top 10.
Right. It's a little more obscure, but I think it's definitely worthy of an honorable mention.
Oh.
And then the other one is going way back to the Joan Rivers show. She actually performed, and I, you know, when I was listening to yours, I went to YouTube and I looked it up. I could not find the Hold It Now, Hit It, which they performed, I think, closing out the show. And that's to see them perform that live, you know, it's not in their repertoire these days, or it hasn't been for a long time. And then they also performed Fight for Your Right, which has explosions and girls dancing and Yauka. You know, the interview, he's sitting in Joan's chair, and I think Adam Horovitz is sitting on her desk. And, I mean, they're being the guys from Fight for Your Right, the party. It was just, I thought that was, just because it's so old and they're so different.
Right.
There's an honorable mention as well.
See, a lot of BC fans will hate me for this, but I don't think they're true genius shows, I don't know, until Paul's Boutique. And in a live format, not until Check Your Head. Although those License to Ill performances, I love the energy in them, but it's just so more refined when Check Your Head comes around. And especially then when Ill Communication comes out, they're just so tight at that point.
Yes, yes, I would agree. I mean, the Fight for Your Right, the party, to see it live, I mean, they're being caricatures of themselves, but they don't come into their own until Check Your Head, Info Communication. I would agree with that.
See, now, Laver, I thought you were going to talk about the Shadrach on Soul Train.
You know, if that was not previously recorded, you know, it's a live version that was recorded earlier in the day or something that they then lip-synced, that takes away from it.
Yeah, yeah, me too.
They tried to do a good job, and they did it. I mean, the audio is incredible, the video is incredible, but they don't sync up because they're not one and the same.
Right.
That it loses points for that. But yeah, if we could find the sound check for that, were they in the studio? Were they on the stage? Where was that recorded? That would be great.
But an A+ for the mega mix quality of that, right?
Yes, they add all the extra, verses in there and the Don Cornelius. Now, you mentioned the $2 Bill show. You've had experiences that very few people have had. You've gotten to interview them. You've gotten to introduce them and be a part of a game show with them. I want to talk about the $2 Bill show out in Vegas and the Five Boroughs game show. I'm not sure if you call that the $2 Bill, you know, the one that was in the studios there.
Right.
First, the Vegas show. How did that come to be? I mean, they had the show, and then they asked you to be a part of it. Did you lobby to be a part of it?
No, at that point in time, MTV2 had a series called the $2 Bill Concert. I think the first one we did was in Baltimore with the Hives. And it actually started out as a proper live concert, and then after the third or fourth one, they would tape it live and then show it on videotape. But I remember it was, I think, January of 2004, we had an MTV2 bowling outing, and during the bowling, one of the executive producers came up to me, and he's like, "Jim, you're going to be really excited." And I'm like, why? And he's like, "Beastie Boys are doing a $2 bill." And I said, "Yes." And I knew that I would get to introduce it, because if it was a rock band or an alternative band, and the Beastie Boys, as much as they've tried to be a hip-hop band, they're always labeled an alternative band, I knew that I would get to introduce it. And in the back of my head, there was a little smidgen of doubt that they would get DJ Clue or Lala to introduce it. But I'm like, no, they know I love the Beastie Boys. They're going to let me introduce it. So I found out in January, and then I had to wait 6 months before I actually got to do it.
Wow. Now, did you, your little introduction, obviously you prepared that beforehand.
Yes.
Do you have a certain time limit? How did that come? How did you spend your time writing that? Did you want it to be short and sweet, but have some punch?
They usually, for the $2 bill concert, they'd usually give me like 30 seconds to do an intro. And I was waiting to do that intro for my whole life. So I had it down in my head, And I think I might have had like little note cards there, but I wasn't reading off the note cards. Those were just to give the effect of me being a boxing announcer since we were in the fight capital of the world, Las Vegas, Nevada. I would say 10 minutes, 10 or 15 minutes before I went on, the producer came up to me and he said, all right, he's like, change of plans. He's like, Mixmaster Mike's going to come up on stage and he's going to do like a 5 to 10 minute intro. So instead of introducing the Beastie Boys, I just want you to introduce Mixmaster Mike. And I was like, no. So in my head, I didn't want to disagree with him, but I said, well, I'm like, I've seen the Beastie show and I know, you know, he's going to come. I mean, he's part of the band. He's going to spin and then the Beastie Boys are going to come on right after them. So how about I introduce the Beastie Boys and Mixmaster Mike? And he's like, oh, I mean, it's just going to be Mixmaster Mike. I'm like, everyone will get it, though. Everyone will get it. Trust me. And he's like, all right, you can introduce the Beastie Boys, but make sure you also introduce Mixmaster Mike. So that's why in my intro, I also introduce Mixmaster Mike, just because I can also introduce the Beastie Boys, which was a lifelong dream of mine.
Yep. Well, that was an awesome intro. I really, really, I watched that. Just the intro, I was like, man, because you can see the passion in your voice. It's like, you know what you're talking about.
Thank you, Labor.
Did you meet or talk to the Beasties prior to the show?
Yes.
Prior to them going on stage, did you like hang out backstage and say, hey, I'm going to introduce you guys?
Yeah, I have a...
I saw a clip, and I think you asked them if they would bring the weave back or something, and I didn't know if that, you know, obviously that was filmed, but was there a non-filmed meeting?
Yeah, let me ask you a question. So it's the day before the $2 Bill concert. I knew the Beastie Boys were going to have a sound check. I think the sound check was supposed to happen at probably like 6 o'clock in the evening. The Beastie Boys were in LA doing press. So they chartered a flight to come to Las Vegas. And the day after, I knew I was going to meet the Beastie Boys. At this point in time, I had never met the Beastie Boys in my life. So I think to myself, I'm like, should I just save it for tomorrow or should I save it for now? And the Beastie Boys were an hour late, then 2 hours late, then 3 hours late. So what would Laver do? Would he meet the Beastie Boys the day before or meet them on the day of when he knew he was going to meet them?
That depends on what you have going on. I mean, so you're sitting in Vegas pretty much just waiting.
Just waiting.
And has there been an update from anyone saying, oh, they're coming? Or
it was like 7 o'clock, 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock. So here's what I did, because I knew I was going to meet them the following day. I said, hey, I've waited 20-something years to meet the Beastie Boys. What's another 2 hours?
Right.
Although we were in a dark club, and I knew they were going to come right into the venue, hop on stage, and do their sound check. So our meeting would probably only be 2 seconds or so. So I decided to meet them that night. They came in at 11 o'clock. It was pitch black in the club. I met Mike D., and I met Ad Rock. I'm like, hey, I'm Jim. Mike D's like, hey. Walks to the stage. Met Ad Rock. He walks to the stage. I'm like, oh, that was sort of an anticlimactic first meeting of the Beastie Boys. And as soon as MCA came in the door, he did a beeline to all the monitors because he wanted to make sure the show looked right. So I didn't even get to meet MCA until the following day. But to your weave question, I'm very grateful to MTV2 because they threw me a bone that week. They scheduled a one-on-one sit-down interview with me and the Beastie Boys. And I kind of knew that they weren't going to use it for anything, but they justified it to the higher-ups by saying that maybe they'll show snippets of this interview before and after commercial breaks on the $2 Bill concert. So yeah. I have that. That's where they, because they never used the interview, and then I transcribed it and I gave it to Beastie Mania a few years back.
I did see you ask them about the weave, though. So they used it. I saw that somewhere.
You did?
Yeah. I remember seeing that, saying that's where I think the seed was planted for the weave to come back. Because the weave had disappeared for a while. and then they didn't use it in the normal break on Root Down because they changed up Root Down where they normally use it during the Apache thing today. And I forgot where they put it. I think they put it in the first song. Was it Sure Shot or something?
No, they used it in Root Down.
Okay.
So, yeah, because in that interview, I did ask them about the weave, and then they said,
yeah,
well,
I,
you know what?
That.
Okay. Because I had it on DVD, like a super clean mix of that interview, and the person that dubbed it for me at MTV years ago put a sticker on the DVD, And over the years, the sticker has bubbled. So now I can't watch that footage. And I went to an intern, actually, a few months back. And I'm like, you need to find this footage. And the intern couldn't find the footage. So if anyone knows how to get the sticky, tacky stuff off of a DVD, if there's any special type of chemical out there, please let me know. And then I will put this video up on YouTube.
Let's fast forward to the, or maybe it's backwards, I'm not sure, the game show that you hosted. So whose idea was it to do a game show?
So that was part of Live to the Five Boroughs, which was the half-hour special on the night of the release of To the Five Boroughs. That show was supposed to be hosted by Damien Fahey, who was an MTV on-air talent at the time, and he was the host of TRL. And I think we did the $2 bill the Wednesday before, and one of the producers, he's like, Jim, would you want to host the To the Five Boroughs show? He's like, I don't know if we can get it to work. He's like, would you be interested? I was like, yeah, I just actually want to go, but if you guys want me to host, I'll definitely host. So somehow they pushed it through, and I got to hop over to MTV for a night to host Live to the Five Boroughs.
Now, whose idea was it for the game show?
I think it was just one of the producers. Like, they had a couple segment producers on the show, and they were just trying to fill time in between their two live performances. And if you watch, yeah, if you watch that, what's that?
Look, my whole theory. I thought for sure with your 20 question game, like, I want to ask the Beasties questions about their own Beastie knowledge.
And if you watch the show, because everything had to flow so quickly, I think we only got through two or three questions.
Right, right. I think they were having fun with it, though. And I would like to see an extended version of that. So if you can ever arrange to have them play 20 questions,
okay.
I would love to see how much they actually know. Now, who pitches that game show idea to the Beasties? Hey, you guys are going to play a game show. Do you know the answer to that?
I would say that the segment producers brought it to the main producer, who is Alex Coletti. And Alex has a lot of clout in the MTV world because he produced several of the VMAs. He's the one who created Unplugged. So I would assume that the Beastie Boys would have a certain amount of respect for Alex, and if he pushed an idea towards them. And actually, you know what? I don't know if Alex actually produced that show, but I knew he was in the mix. So by him being in the mix, and by him doing the $2 bill the week earlier, I would assume that the Beastie Boys would have some faith in certain MTV personnel.
Okay, and then who wrote the actual questions? If I remember, you asked questions, then you showed the video clip. So somebody has to go and pull the clip, and there, you know, there's a little bit of pre-work involved in that. Did you have any?
No, I had no. Yeah, that was all MTV. I just I came in. They gave me the rundown, and I said, okay. And I'm just going to have fun with this. But the one thing that bugged me was at the beginning of the show, they wanted me to start off with a question, just a random question about the album. And I said, cool, all right. And they're like, well, here's a note card. And I'm like, well, I don't need the note card. I know what I'm going to ask the Beastie Boys. And they're like, please, just take the note card. I'm like, I don't need it. They're like, come on, just take the note card. I'm like, all right, I'll just take the note card. So as soon as the Beastie Boys came on stage, what was the first thing that Mike D did? He grabbed for the damn note card. So I had to actually pull it away from him and just throw it off stage. So
can I see that if I YouTube it?
Okay. You can. The first thing he does is he grabs for the damn card, and I'm like, I didn't even want to have this damn card. Because as you know, the Beastie Boys like to have fun with interviewers, so I was assuming he was going to go to the card, read the question, and then do something silly with the question.
And then let's go back a little bit further. I guess go back to the beginning. What was your first Beastie memory? Ooh. And you may have talked about this on the Brouhaha, but I mean, where did you first hear of the Beastie Boys or hear a song by the Beastie Boys?
First Beastie memory. I went to St. Bonaventure's grade school. I was on the bus. I would think I would probably be like in fourth, fifth, or sixth grade. And one of the older kids, probably a seventh or eighth grader, would always bring a boombox on the bus. And I remember him playing Fight for Your Right to Party. I remember Girls. I remember Rhyming and Stealing. And I was like, whoa, That's cool stuff. Because they would also play Run DMC. They'd play a lot of old school hip hop. And it's funny now because I don't think a bus driver would let a 7th or 8th grader bring this giant boombox on the bus, especially in a Catholic school, and just blast it all the way on the ride home. But back in the 80s, that was permissible.
And different times. Different times. Any interesting, as you got older and went to some concerts, any interesting road trips with friends?
Oh, man.
I remember you said you talked about Lollapalooza, but any like two nights in a row, three nights in a row, we're going to go and on the East Coast trek of a tour?
Unfortunately, Beastie Boys never come to Pittsburgh, so they didn't come to Pittsburgh to support Check Your Head, but they did come to Burgettstown, 45 minutes out of Pittsburgh, for Lollapalooza 1994. I saw them two times that summer. I saw them first in Columbus, and you can actually see snippets of that in the Root Down video, and then I saw them a week or so later at Burgettstown. And,
In 1994, that's when the Smashing Pumpkins were the headliner. Did people leave after the Beasties, or did they just leave after Smashing Pumpkins?
No, it was funny. And by the way, for years, the Lollapalooza show at the Polaris Amphitheater in Columbus, Ohio, was my favorite Beastie Boys show ever. And people just went berserk for the Beastie Boys. And I can't even explain it, but if you were there, you just knew that the Beastie Boys were hitting at the precise moment in time.
So you never saw them in 92 for Check Your Head?
No. And actually, like a lot of people say, if you could go back in time to any year, where would you go? And I'm like, I wouldn't go back to the Civil War times or the Old West. I'd actually like to go back to 1992 to see the Beastie Boys on the Check Your Head tour. Oh,
very
but to
cool.
answer your question, Laver, I left after the Beastie Boys because how could anything compare to that?
Yeah, I went to the Dallas Lollapalooza show and it was kind of the same thing. So tell me, what was your worst Beastie concert, if you can go there?
I can go
there. Concert you were disappointed with?
And it's actually, there was two times I saw the Beastie Boys in Cleveland, and both of those times, I mean, the Beastie Boys were great, but the fans sort of soured me. Because it was, this was 95 the first time. Like right after they did Lollapalooza, they went out on another, that was the
quadraphonic.
Yeah. The quadraphonic stereo tour. And that was when America was just so into their moshing. And I remember the Beastie Boys were playing Sure Shot and I got knocked over twice. And I said, oh, you can mosh during Heart Attack Man and Tough Guy, but you don't mosh during Sure Shot. And then in 98, I saw the Beastie Boys again in Cleveland. And we actually brought, I think there was eight of us that went, seven or eight of us. And we had, everyone had a poster board that looked like a Scrabble piece that spelled out Quagmire. And we were so excited to show this off to the Beastie Boys. And right when we got to the front door, security said, no, you're not allowed to bring any. I'm like, come on. I spent a whole afternoon making these signs. He's like, no. So that bummed me out. And then throughout the show, there was these knuckleheads, I'd say four rows in front of me. They were ripping off the seat handles. I don't know if you, in the arena, like all the seats have little plastic handles. So they're ripping off the seat handles and then just chucking them down into the pit on top of people's heads, which had to hurt because we were in the upper deck. So,
which leads me to the next question. Where is the best place to see the Beasties? Upper deck, in a seat, in the middle of the floor, front row, or side stage?
Whew. I would prefer middle of the floor with a lot of room to do my power dance moves.
Okay. Which is tough to do in the middle of the floor. And I'm not sure how tall you are, but it's, unless you're at a certain height, it's tough. You can get drowned. You know, it's hard to see over people's heads.
Yeah. See, I'm 6'3", so I can see on the floor.
Okay.
And I know now, like, a lot of arenas won't pack the floor, I guess, for safety reasons. So when I saw the Beastie Boys on the pageant tour in 2004 at Nassau Coliseum, I was on the floor, and there was plenty of room to dance. So I thoroughly enjoyed myself.
Let me think. Any other questions about concerts? Other than like for work, going to Las Vegas, any long journeys? You mentioned around the Pittsburgh area in Ohio and Cleveland.
In 98, we made a journey to the Tibetan Freedom Concert. And the first day...
Where was that? Was that
RFK. Yeah, that was... No, it was RFK in Washington, D.C. And the first night, there was... the first day, actually, lightning struck someone. And I think a girl had, like, a wire bra on, so the lightning struck the seat. It went through the seat to her bra, and they had to cancel the whole concert that day. And I was like, oh, no, what if this happens again tomorrow? I'm going to miss the Beastie Boys. But they squeezed everything in the second day, and the Beastie Boys performed in powder blue lab coats, and it was excellent.
Well, that answers a lot of my questions. Although I could talk about them all day.
I know. We should do that.
You know. I appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Behind the scenes, you have a very unique perspective and very unique experiences because of your job and, you know, professional, what you do for VH1. So you have some good backstories and some very cool insight into the Beasties and how they operate.
And that's one of the many reasons why I love my job. Because as my contract was winding down a couple years ago, I thought, please let me just sign me on for a couple more years so I can be around when the Beastie Boys release a brand new album. So fortunately, I was around when the Beastie Boys put out a brand new album. Unfortunately, they didn't do a lot of press, but for obvious reasons.
Right.
Now, Laver, I have a question for you before you go.
Yes.
And I don't want to get you fired from work because I know you snuck outside for a second. I was in Chicago not too long ago. Our schedules did not work out because you're about to head out on a mammoth road trip vacation. But what goodies do you have in your Beastie Museum?
Wow. I have a lot of stuff down there that I've acquired over the years. Some of the weirder, cooler things would be a bus sign from Lollapalooza 1994. It's these long, it's like 10 feet long by 2 feet wide. It was literally on the side of a bus, and in a prior life, I worked for an advertising agency, so I knew the folks that do that kind of stuff, and I bought it for $10.
Whoa.
Lollapalooza, it has all the names listed, Beastie second behind, you know, Smashing Pumpkins. I also got back when Tower Records was around, they used to make these styrofoam kind of displays, and for when Check Your Head came out, I ended up, they sell them after they're done with them, and I got Check Your Head one that, you know, it's a handmade Check Your Head deal, and it's got the little pieced together photographs on it as well.
Nice.
And Adams has been to the Beastie Museum, and I didn't know this, but like his son is actually in that montage of pictures. So for all these years, I've had Say's son in my basement.
Now, which one is his son? Because we talked about this when we saw him last.
I don't have the montage in front of me, but I think he's in there twice. I think he's next to the red sneakers that were also in the Paul's Boutique cover.
Ah.
And there's another picture of it. It's kind of like his face. And he's probably, I don't know, 5 or 6, 7 years old, somewhere around that.
Yeah.
An age frame. So if I had the thing in front of me, I could tell you kind of where he is. Other stuff, I have a couple of empty bottles of Brass Monkey. I got a whole bunch of albums and T-shirts and, you know, stuff like that. A couple of autographed things. You know, from some of the guys. He got a drumstick from Fredo that he signed. You know, that kind of stuff. I got a couple of mobiles from a couple of different albums as well. And it's a place where you can go and listen to the Beastie Boys.
Now, is it down in your basement?
Yeah, down in the basement, along with a pool table and a dartboard.
Okay.
So, you know, you can go down there and play some pool while you...
Well, next time I'm in Chicago, let's coordinate.
Absolutely.
And I should also point out that while Say Adams is in Chicago, are you not his personal chauffeur?
I was his personal chauffeur last time he was here, which was for the Lollapalooza that was canceled for, well, the Beastie's canceled for it, whenever that was. Was that 08, 09?
Yeah, I get that. Somewhere in that area.
Somewhere in that neighborhood. And then also to bring in Shay Adams news, I know his, I'm sure you guys talked about it, and I'm not sure if you're planning to have him back on, but the book that he's been working on, the Def Jam,
yep,
coming out next month or so. And so I just sent him a note to see if there's going to be a book tour or event or something. And I think they're actually coming back to Chicago sometime in October. So hopefully I can connect back up with them.
All right. Well, Laver, I will, as always, I will say goodbye to you in real life. But right now on the Brouhaha, we are going to take a break. So don't nobody go nowhere.
I want to take this minute to introduce you to my people.
A-D-O-O-C-K-M-I-K-E to the D.
M to the C to the A. That's a boss. The rhymes that we boss on the topic of lust.
It does go well with the chicken.
The Brew. Ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha.
We have returned to the Brouhaha, and now joining us for a game of 20 questions is Mike. But I believe in the email it said Mikeadin.
Yes, Mikeadin, yeah. That's been like my tag for a very long time. Also, I'm a musician, a DJ, and it's been my DJ name and since I want to give away my age too much, but for a very long time.
Well, yeah, you're going to give away your age because you were telling me that you saw the Beastie Boys back when they were touring off License to Ill.
Yeah. So,
are there any shows that stick out from that era?
The Philly show, oh my goodness, it was Run DMC, Public Enemy, LL. It was like the Fresh Fest, I believe it was called. Yeah, it was pretty crazy.
do you remember any songs they did?
Yeah, it was like the hip hop stuff, like It's the New Style, Posse and Effect, you know, that type of stuff. Stuff that actually they enjoy playing.
It's stuff that holds up now.
Yes, and you know, it's actually on the board the other day. They were talking about, unfortunately, I mean, I don't listen to radio ever since the invention of the iPod, but people are complaining about how the only thing that they hear now on the radio is from License to Ill, and it's the stuff that people nowadays usually skip past, which is Fight for Your Right.
Yeah.
No Sleep Till Brooklyn, which is still good. And Girls you hear on the radio.
Girls, Brass Monkey you'll hear every so often.
Brass Monkey, I'll enjoy some Brass Monkey.
See, yeah, because it was a great album, but the stuff they put out afterwards, I could give you like 40 songs to play on the radio after that.
Exactly. You know, every once in a while you'll hear some like Intergalactic or something like that.
Right.
But like, you know, nothing from like the Paul's Boutique era or really anything from like, you know, which sparked off like, you know, when they got creative, like with
Head and oddly enough, you know, on rock radio stations, you never hear Gratitude. You think you would?
Yeah, you know, and it's that's actually a jam that's so well respected. I saw them at a festival that was in Philadelphia. They were headlining with the Strokes, and I can't remember. Gosh, I can't remember the name of the radio station, but they did it. They did a festival every year, and just some random, really cheesy, like you know, rock band was playing, and my friend Seth and I were like up in the stands, and all of a sudden, like they had a break between songs, and then the guy just started playing the riff to Gratitude.
Whoa.
And I was like, all right. I was like, I'll give you some respect for that. Like, it just like woke the fans up too, because you know the fans are just waiting, 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 and all of a sudden you can just hear, you know, that bass line that Yauk is so known for, and everybody was just like, wow, okay, we'll give you some respect for that, even though you suck.
It's a very catchy bass line. Now, Mike, I'm glad to hear that you have kept up with the Beastie Boys, because I don't know if you've ever listened to the Brouhaha, but 20 questions, we ask questions from all eras. So how strong are you with the latter eras of the Beastie Boys?
Pretty good.
Okay.
I would say.
And new stuff? Yeah. New stuff?
Yeah, I've kept up with them, so I feel like I fell in love like back in like 85, 86, and it's to me it's like, you know, it's just like Star Wars. You never give it up.
All right, so are you ready?
I am ready, yeah.
Do you know the rules, by the way?
I do not.
Okay, I ask you 20 questions. If you answer all of them correctly, I will send you a homemade Beastie Boys diorama. If you get stumped along the way, you will have 3 opportunities for me to give you multiple choice.
Okay.
And then other than that, you're on your own. There are some questions, the way that they're structured, I can't give you multiple choice.
Sure.
And we haven't played this in a while on the Brouhaha. And as I look over the questions, it seems kind of tough.
Oh, cool.
So if you do win, you will earn it today.
All right,
start the music. Question number 1, and the first 5 questions should be sort of easy.
Okay.
That being said, you might miss one. But anyway, here we go. Question number 1, name one of the 2 guest appearances on Hot Sauce Committee Part 2.
Nas.
There you go. Nas and Santigold, you're off to a good start. Question number 2. On the Beastie Boys In the Round Tour, what was so special about the stage?
It was actually a moving platter, like a circle, so you could see the band
That's all we need. I don't think too don't think too hard about the first 5. You could have said it was round. You are correct.
I was thinking
about this. It rotated 30 degrees for each. No, you don't have to think that hard. Question number 3. Why was the Beastie Boys and Rage Against the Machine Rhyme and Reason Tour canceled in the year 2000?
Because Mike D hit a pothole with his bicycle and busted up the shoulder.
Yep. Why did Mike have to ride that bike? You are correct. Mike D injured. Question number 4. This is called Which Song Am I? I give you 3 little hints. You tell me the song. Crystal Balls Ain't So Crystal Clear in this song. I shout out Buddy Rich, and my original title was Chris Rock. Which song am I?
Oh my God. I think I'm going to need a multiple choice on this one.
All right. You ready?
Yep.
A, Sabotage. B, No Sleep Till Brooklyn. C, Girls. Or D, Check It Out.
I'm going to go Sabotage.
I'm going to cut you off and say you are correct.
Your crystal ball ain't so crystal clear.
Yes.
Yeah, God, how did I not? Wow.
Listen, when you're on the hot seat, it's a different story.
Yeah, definitely.
And we go to question number 5 now. What Beastie Boys album does the song Electrify appear?
Electrify would be on Hello Nasty.
Hello Nasty is correct. We move on to question number 6. What Beastie Boys release features a boy squeezing his head inside of a vice grip?
Aglio e Olio.
You are correct. I always say Aglio e Olio. And we move on to question number 7. Gets a little tough now. What is Adam Horovitz's middle name? Hint, he mentions it in the Beastie Boys song, B-Boys in the Cut.
Oh, goodness. I'll go with the multiple choice.
A, Keith. B, Aaron. C, sharp cheddar, or D, sweet Lou?
It's A.
Keith.
Yes, his middle name's Keith.
And my middle name's Keith, because he keeps that microphone in that weird little sheath.
Little sheath, yeah. Wow.
You're correct. You have one more multiple choice, and we march on to question number 8. What Beastie Boy will celebrate his birthday next?
It'll be Ad Rock in October.
Is that your final answer?
Yeah, I believe Yelp was in August. Yeah, Ad Rock.
October 31st, that is my date of birth. You are correct. Yeah. Question number 9, another What Song Am I? And here are the 3 hints. Ad Rock is enjoying chocolate fondue in a bathtub. MCA jumps out a window onto a parade balloon. And the Jewish Brad Pitt, he makes an appearance.
I do know the Jewish Brad Pitt. Let's make some noise.
Is that your final answer? You got one more multiple choice left if you wanted to use it.
Yeah, let me get some multiple choice.
All right, here we go. A, Sure Shot. B, Say It. C, Long Burn the Fire. Or D, Pass the Mic.
Oh, man, I was way off then. I'm going to go with Long Burn the Fire.
Final.
Yeah, that's it.
You are correct. We move on to question number 10. And right now, Mike Aden, you are all out of multiple choice.
Yeah, that's sad, man. That's what happens when you work the night shift. You cop up in your head. All tired.
Well, listen, you've gone further than some people. Some people went out question number 7. And like I said, because I haven't done this in a while, the questions, they seem a little more difficult this time around.
Yeah, that's cool.
Okay. Question number 10 is the old World Trade Center featured on the cover of 2 to 5 Boroughs.
Is this true or false?
This is a yes or no.
Oh, yes, it is.
It is? You are correct. It is on the cover. Question number 11. What live song was not, and I stress, not included on the Root Down EP? A, Heart Attack Man. B, Maestro. C, Root Down. Or D, Flute Loop.
I think, oddly enough, Root Down wasn't on that live EP.
Kind of a trick question. You are correct. Root Down, not on the Root Down EP.
Yeah.
And we move on to question number 12. I think you've hit a little bit of a rhythm now. All right, this is a trick question, so listen carefully. What year did the Beastie Boys release Hot Sauce Committee Part 1?
It has not been released.
You are correct, and we move on to question number 13. In the film Fight for Your Right Revisited, what Beastie Boy is hit by a car? Just to let you know, you are the first contestant on 20 Questions since the new album has come out.
Oh, wow.
I think so. I might be wrong on that, but this is the most new stuff that I've written in a while. So you have had more Hot Sauce Committee Part 2 stuff than anyone else on the Brouhaha.
You know, it's funny because I just dropped the record. And so I've been so involved with my music. And it's just the other night I just put on this record for the first time in I would say a month. Yeah, I was listening to other stuff. But that video. I'm almost feeling like it was MCA that got hit. He was on a skateboard. And yeah, I'm going to go with MCA.
MCA, you are actually correct. We go on to question number 14. Unlicensed to Ill, and this is your strength right now. The Beastie Boys have more rhymes than this legendary actress and comedian, and they have rhymes like this legendary actor. Who are the two characters that I'm talking about?
Yeah, they definitely have more rhymes than A. Bagoda. They got more rhymes than A. Bagoda. And
two legendary stars of Hollywood shouted out on License to Ill. They got more rhymes than one, and they got rhymes like the other.
Oh, they got more rhymes than... Oh, God. I got more rhymes than...
Ironically, Mike and May go down on a License to Ill question. It's funny that you got Abe Vigoda, because I would always go with the other one first. And I thought the Abe Vigoda one was more obscure than the other one.
Now, Abe Vigoda always stuck with me, because I was like, man, seriously, the fish? I'm blanking, man. I know Abe Vigoda, and
I
got more fun.
You're going to kick yourself.
Yeah, I am totally. I have to continue that. Who is it?
You throwing the towel?
Unfortunately, yeah.
All right. Well, first off, Mike Eden, good job. You answered 13 correctly. In the song, Time to Get Ill, the Beastie Boys rap, I got rhymes galime, I got rhymes galilla, and I got more rhymes than Phyllis Diller.
God, that's ridiculous.
And then in Posse in Effect, I got a girl in the castle and one in the pagoda. You know I got rhymes like Abe Vigoda.
Abe Vigoda, yeah, definitely. Good questions, man. Good questions. Yeah, the new stuff like stumped me, but I got killed on the classics.
But thank you for playing.
Thank you, man. Thank you for having me.
And right now, if anyone would like to play 20 questions on the Brouhaha, just drop me an email over at beastiepodcast@gmail.com. And Mike Eden, don't think too much about this.
I still have to get through my day today, but I'll see.
And then you got work tonight too.
I do. So hopefully I'll be able to, I'll have a good cry and then I'll pull myself and make myself strong.
And then you move on. You move on from this. So, Mike Eden, thank you for joining us on the Brouhaha today.
Awesome.
So, for Mike Eden, Laver 1969, my name is Jim Shear, and we will see yins later.
That's it, that's all there is. Come on.
Yo, we gonna end it on a 1, 2, 3 note. Are you ready? 1, 2 1, 2, 3
Guarantee we bring the brouhaha.
It's your brouhaha.